This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by FullScript. FullScript is a virtual dispensing platform that helps practitioners, myself included, improve patient care and adherence by dispensing professional-grade supplements from anywhere. It has the industry's most comprehensive catalog of products and features like refill reminders and auto-reorder. I've been using FullScript in my practice for years. I even use FullScript to order supplements for myself and my family. They've got all the brands I use. So I have firsthand knowledge of the impact that they can have on your patients. It's simple to use, providing EHR integrations, customizable dosage instructions, and an evidence-based protocol library. It makes integrative medicine feel integrated. It integrates with your way of working and with your patients' day-to-day lives. So if you're looking to boost patient adherence and eliminate inventory management, you should really try FullScript. If you're a practitioner looking to sign up, go to fullscript.com/Hoffman to start using FullScript for free today. If you're a patient currently ordering supplements from your doctor, let them know about FullScript. Tell them Dr. Hoffman sent you. Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. I'm with Layla Mutin, who's our nutritionist in residence, and together we answer questions of a general nature, or as so many people continue to have concerns, about coronavirus. And the good news this week is that really in the spirit of lifting the lockdown, we have some COVID-19 questions, and we also have some ordinary questions, because we're getting back to normalization. And presto, it's after Memorial Day. I hope you had a wonderful Memorial Day. Layla, how you doing?
Yeah, not bad. Out east, as you were yourself, how are you doing?
Good. Were you on the beach?
I took a walk on the beach. You know, we took walks on the beach and, you know, sat in the yard, and I do a lot of forest bathing because my backyard backs up onto a preserve.
Oh, good. Okay, but so you had, there was,
it's
no,
it's my zen. It's my zen area.
So the beach patrol did not admonish you couldn't walk on the beach, or what is it that you can't
walk on the beach?
You can walk on the beach. Okay, that's
you walk on the beach and you could sit on the beach and, you know, socially
Eastern
distance.
Long Island, and that it wasn't like. It wasn't like Coney Island. It wasn't like, people on top of each other.
No. This is a quiet little beach community.
Okay, good. Okay. Yeah, I was near the water myself, at my weekend home on Long Island. And, the whole family was there. It was nice to get together with people who've been quarantining and presumably have been negative. Testing negative, so it's safe, I think, for families to get together. When we get together with strangers in restaurants and in bars and in movies and so on, that's where it gets a little dicey because you don't know who's going into the mix. But if you know that people have been well, it's okay. And, you know, we didn't wear masks inside.
Right.
So we know that we've all been okay. I was technically, I obeyed the dictum that you're not supposed to go in the water. Well, that's for New York City only. I guess Long Island, you can go in the water. But in New York City, right. Curiously, you can walk on the beach, but you can't go in the water. I did not go into the water for the principal reason, not that I'm a law-abiding citizen, but because when I checked, it was 56 degrees.
still chilly. Yeah.
Still pretty cold because it's been kind of a delayed spring this year. And so I was on my stand-up paddleboard, and I did not fall in. So technically, I was not in violation of any rule or ordinance on my stand-up paddleboard. But
right.
Very careful not to fall in the water, because I hate to fall in the water. Might knock my sunglasses off, and, you know, that would be a bummer. So, did a little paddleboarding and, enjoyed my weekend. So, here we are, back to business. And the good news is that here in New York, the lockdown ever so slowly is lifting. And now we're entitled to see patients in our office with appropriate restrictions. Also, we're doing some telemedicine. So, normalization is underway. So, we have.
You know, I want to. I traveled back actually to New York City on Memorial Day, Monday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the things I noticed, Dr. Hoffman, around my neighborhood is a couple of bars, they had, you know, you kind of go up to the door, have service, place your order, mm-hmm. and then pick it up. And you're supposed to take your cocktail to go.
Yeah.
Well,
how's that working out?
Memorial Day.
How's that working out?
And there were these two places where people were congregating.
Yeah.
With their alcoholic beverages and sipping, you know, lifting up the mask, sipping, putting the mask back on, and basically congregating. And some of the bars had to put up signs saying, please don't congregate here. Take your item to go and go.
I noticed the same thing was happening even a couple of weeks ago here in Manhattan. You know, the idea is, you know, they've set up like these windows where they dispense mixed drinks. And, you know, it's, look, I mean, what's the big deal? I mean, you can go home and you can mix your own drink, but no, it's kind of nice to go to a place where you're served, and then there are people standing on the sidewalk, so you talk to the people on the sidewalk, and of course you lift the lid of your drink, and you know, you sip your drink, and pretty soon you're congregating on the sidewalk, you know, 30, 40 people. And, you know, that's, I mean, the jailbreak is on here in New York, and I, you know, there were
people
cops nearby.
On the streets is what I mean to say.
Yeah, this open container laws notwithstanding.
This is an unintended consequence.
Yeah.
And, you know, if the bars and restaurants don't do something, they're all going down.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
They're all going down.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I just feel terrible for people in those service industries. I mean, in a sense, we're, you know, a service industry as well, you know, in the non-emergency medicine business. You know, you can postpone your nutritional consultation, you know, for a month or two. It's, you know, some people have urgent medical problems, but only lately have they lifted the restriction on elective medical visits and elective surgery. So, you know, what they're saying is that there's some really collateral damage of that is a lot of people are postponing essential medical interventions. You know, they're not getting tested. You know,
they're not getting their prevention screenings. They're not doing any of those things.
Simple, you know, cancer screenings, biopsies, and so on. And it's just because of the some of it is there's actually you can't because they don't permit you. But some of it is just, you know, running the gauntlet, you know, to get into a doctor's office, you know, where you maybe other sick patients, you know, getting using the public transportation and so on and so on and so on. So, you know, there are some collateral damage of COVID-19. Even if you don't get COVID-19, there may be, if some people estimate that the medical consequences of COVID-19 will be a tantamount to or even exceed the illness and mortality that's caused by the disease itself because of, you know, people not attending to important medical milestones. But, you know, that's, you know, it's a balancing act. You know, it's like, how do you, you know, you want to flatten the curve, you want to flatten the curve, but, you know, what are the consequences economically, medically, socially, deaths of despair, you know, were a big problem well before coronavirus, you know, people, you know, on drugs, with alcohol, victims of abuse, suicides, depression. And certainly we're seeing an increase in the use of anti-anxiety medication that's actually going up. And some of it legally obtained and some of it illicitly obtained.
Well, on that note,
before we get to questions,
well,
tease us with the first question, and then, you know, we're going to go to a break to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share an important message. So what's coming up first?
Is it true that masks do not protect us from the virus?
Okay, that's the $64,000 question. We're going to tackle that in just a moment. But first, a word from one of our sponsors. Earlier in the episode, I mentioned FullScript. Remember, FullScript is a virtual dispensing platform that helps practitioners, myself included, I'm a user, dispense professional-grade supplements and improve patient adherence from anywhere. For example, when you write a prescription through FullScript, it gets sent directly to patients via text or email. And when they place an order, the supplements get shipped right to their front door. It's incredibly convenient. The most incredible part, though, is it's completely free and available to all kinds of practitioners, giving you complete control over balancing revenue with patient affordability. So if you're looking to boost patient adherence and eliminate inventory management, you should really try FullScript. If you're a practitioner looking to sign up, go to fullscript.com/Hoffman to start using FullScript for free today. If you're a patient currently ordering supplements from your doctor, let them know about FullScript. Tell them Dr. Hoffman sent you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make intelligent medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now, back to our questions with Layla. What's on tap? Question about masks.
Yeah, from Penny. Penny writes, hello, Dr. Hoffman. Hope you and your staff are staying well. Enjoy listening to your radio show very much. My question to you is, we hear wearing masks is not for ourselves, but others. Is it true that masks do not protect us from the virus?
Yeah, okay. So, you know, there's been an enormous amount written on masks. I've written some of it. You know, first of all, there's been some real messaging problems about masks, and that's undermined people's confidence in masks, because first they said, well, masks don't help unless you have the professional kind of mask, you know, N95 masks and comparable masks, you know, or like the helmets that healthcare workers now wear with shields. And so they said, don't bother wearing a mask, but save those masks for the poor healthcare workers don't have enough masks. Remember, that was what they were saying in March.
Yes.
And then they said, okay, turns out that we have enough masks, so please wear a mask. But there are different types of masks. The N95 masks were kind of scarce. With the problem with the N95 masks is that the average person wearing an N95 mask might not use it properly and get a perfect fit. They have to be fitted properly. This is one of the reasons why healthcare workers are actually doing much better than at first, because some of them didn't have protective gear, some of them weren't using it correctly, and so unfortunately some people got sick. It turns out, listening to Cuomo, you know, regardless of what you think of Cuomo, he did broadcast an important statistic, which is that among healthcare workers, there was actually a reduced incidence of infection than the general populace, partially because they really are very effectively gowned. So they do seem to work. I mean,
barrier.
You know, so that kind of undermined the potency of the first message, which is like, don't wear masks, they're no good. Well, if they're so not good, how come you're saving your mask for the healthcare worker, you know? But so
a little bit of a mixed message.
So these other masks, the typical surgical masks, you know, they're usually like a light blue, you know, sort of Tiffany blue. Those masks are partially effective in protecting you. You still can inhale viral particles around the mask because they don't fit perfectly and they're somewhat porous. I mean, the viral particle is very tiny. And
much smaller than this mesh that's on the mask.
And besides, you can also get it through your eyes, so you're not perfectly protected. It's a little bit of a, you know, fool's paradise that you are wearing a mask and somehow it's some impregnable barrier. Then there are the cloth masks, and people like the cloth masks because you can rewash them. They come in wonderful colors. You know, like Nancy Pelosi has one to match every one of her outfits. You know, you've noticed? She's like wearing like, you know, a light blue, you know, outfit. She has a nice light blue mask. If she's wearing something solemn and formal and dark, she's wearing a black mask. I mean, but on and on it goes. It's basically like she has a cloth mask. But, you know, I think there's a lot of memes that you see on social media now that show, and, you know, I've done this, you know, when I was a little kid peering through a microscope, we put fabric under a microscope and we would see that fabric, looks like a tennis net. It's a mesh. And the viral particles are much smaller. They're much tinier. So they can get through, they can go in and they can go out, in the cloth mask. But this is not to say that the cloth masks don't offer some protection to you.
It is a physical barrier.
It is a bit of a barrier. And if you cough or sneeze, well, you know, you might expel some viral particles through the mask or around the mask, but at least you're not going to expel a big glob of snot, you know. You know, so there's some protection. But, you know, all of this is somewhat theoretical because There are some studies of the efficacy of masks, but it's kind of unethical to do studies with inadequate masks. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's kind of like a Nazi concentration camp experiment.
Right.
It's like, let's take some volunteers and let's put them in a room full of coronavirus particles with various types of masks, and we'll see who gets sick. I mean, no, there are observational studies which show some degree of protection. So, you know, nowadays, they say, okay, it's better to wear a mask. You know, Dr. Birx says, yeah, it's better to wear a mask. Okay, so play along, wear a mask. Again, for some people, that is a bridge too far, because for them, wearing a mask is a sign of kowtowing to a government directive, which, you know, this being America, Americans tend to be, you know, less compliant than people in certain other countries. In Asia, it's a cultural thing. They're very used to wearing masks. I mean, well before coronavirus, it was not uncommon to see, and you know, and I don't want to stigmatize or stereotype, but it was not uncommon to see a person of Asian background in the subway wearing a mask.
Sure.
Because they have had so many alarms. They've dealt with it. So many, they had dealt with SARS. They dealt with H1N1.
They're a regular part of their lives.
Yeah,
right?
That they during cold and flu season they wear masks.
Yeah.
So that's something that's enculturated.
Yeah.
So, bottom line, wear a mask. I think the surgical masks are a little better.
Mm-hmm.
They can't be washed. They can be reworn. But, you know, at some risk, because, you know, if you're in a place where there's a lot of virus and your mask gets contaminated, you know, it's possible that the mask is not a perfect protectant.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, you will get some degree of protection from the masks.
Okay. All right. Penny, hope that answers your question. Let's see here. Oh, we have one from Marianne, again, about COVID-19. Dr. Hoffman, what about elderberry? Should I take it every day, like you would take vitamin C every day?
Well, the evidence for elderberry, it actually doesn't pertain to it any documented efficacy in COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Anything about elderberry and COVID-19 is kind of an extrapolation from what we know from studies in relationship to the flu. You know, so it has been studied in relationship to influenza, and some of that research is Israeli research, where it was demonstrated to have somewhat of a protective effect or diminish the duration and severity of flu. So, you know, again, coronavirus, different than the flu, and but we knew, though, that elderberry can enhance cytokines, which is a plus. Some people argue against elderberry because if you enhance your cytokines, you could go into cytokine storm. I've looked at a lot of the evidence pro and con on that. And it, by the way, this is a theoretical argument because we don't really know. I don't think they're doing studies, you know, people in cytokine storm. Like, did you take elderberry by any chance? Like, I doubt if many people with cytokine storm have taken elderberry. Because, you know, some of the people who develop cytokine storm don't take anything.
We did have a similar question. I'll just inject it right here.
Yeah.
If adequate amounts of zinc enhance or boost natural immunity, would overloading with zinc during a cytokine storm?
It may be actually the opposite, because we know that zinc has, there's sort of a U-shaped curve of protection. You know, so there's no protection when you're zinc insufficient, but if you're overdosing on zinc, if say you're taking, you know, 200 milligrams or 220 milligrams of zinc every day, day in and day out, you might get somewhat of an immunosuppression, which might make you more vulnerable to infections, but it also might curb your tendency towards cytokine storm.
Yeah.
So, we tend to think of immunity as just, you know, and I've used this analogy before, is like on a dimmer switch. It's like too much, too little, just right. But immunity is very complicated. And, you know, so things that help immunity may not necessarily increase autoimmunity or cytokine storm. So the answer is we don't know. What we do know is that zinc is important for immunity. Again, you know, we're going to qualify that statement. You know, has zinc been demonstrated to have efficacy in for COVID-19? Well, there's some research looking at combinations, hydroxychloroquine with zinc and with azithromycin. And those studies seem to suggest a therapeutic benefit. In some of the studies that show no benefit of hydroxychloroquine, they weren't using zinc. So it may be that the addition of zinc, I mean, this is just theoretical again, the addition of zinc to the hydroxychloroquine azithromycin cocktail is what, you know, makes a difference. Not that hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin don't do anything. You know, it's, again, we're extrapolating from studies that show that zinc plays a crucial role in immunity. So to the question about, you know, elderberry, should you, you know, should you stop? I mean, it's just something you can take day in and day out. The answer is we don't know. But it may be that during cold and flu season, it's something to take as a general preventive. And if you've, I mean, just rule of thumb, if you feel like you're coming down with something, you can take more.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I felt like I was coming down with a bad cold, and I immediately took some elderberry for a few days, and that was that.
And that cold is not influenza.
Right.
But some colds are rhinoviruses, and some colds, it might have been influenza. Some colds are rhinoviruses.
Maybe. Exactly. Body aches and everything, so
Okay. Well, so maybe with more of a flu-like syndrome. But,
Well, all right. Marianne, we hope that answers your question. We have one from Paul. Do you always develop antibodies when exposed to a virus?
That's a very good question. And the answer is mostly
yes. He's speaking specifically of coronavirus, right?
Right. But, you know, I think we have to just say we don't know in terms of coronavirus. But it's highly likely that you develop some antibody response. The question is whether that antibody response will be robust enough to prevent another infection. But again, this is extrapolating from vaccines. Vaccines are designed to elicit an antibody response. And many vaccines have the problem that they don't safeguard the very people who we need to safeguard, the elderly and the immune suppressed. Why? Because if you have a normal immune system and you get the vaccine takes and you develop a normal, robust immune response. If you are elderly or immunosuppressed for whatever reason, a typical example of that is with the Zostavax vaccine, which is the Zoster vaccine for shingles. Yeah, it's the old vaccine that's being supplanted with the Shingrix. And what happened with Zostavax is that it, double digits of people did not get protection because they were too old to mount an antibody response. A little less the case with the Shingrix. But the same thing with the flu. The flu vaccine, there's a normal one for normal people, and then there's a kind of a stronger one for people over a certain age, for seniors. And it's designed to more strongly elicit development of antibodies to the antigen in the vaccine. So, there are even studies that show that you can amp up the immune response to a vaccine with certain nutrients, you know, among which are zinc. If you're going to take a shot, you know, it might behoove you to have the proper nutrition and the proper vitamin mineral support to enable your body to process the vaccine into effective protection.
Okay. Paul, thank you for that question. Let's see. I think this is the last one on coronavirus for a little while. This is a very thoughtful one from Judy. I'm wondering if my two adult children and their spouses and one infant grandchild are quarantining, and I am quarantining, is it okay if we get together and have a meal? Mm-hmm. Is it okay if I hold my infant grandchild?
Yeah, that's a real Memorial Day question, because lots of families undertook precisely that experiment, you know, including my family. You know, all of us individual nuclear families were quarantining in place, and everybody was okay, and they barely went outside except to shop, you know, with appropriate social distancing and masks. And everybody was well. Everybody was well. Nobody has been tested to see if they have antibodies. So then, you know, we all got together over the holidays, and we had no constraints. There was a lot, little less kissing. There was a little less, you know, there's a little more hand washing, and there was a little less hugging. The hugging was maybe the, you know, turn your face away kind of hugging.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And so, you know what I mean? So
a little nod to former germ phobes. Now here's your reason.
So, but, you know, I think that's going to, that's the beginning of the unlocking is for, I mean, the other way that that has been depicted is in the parks, there have been like little circles on the ground. You know, it's like little mini crop circles, you know, like, who put those circles down? Aliens? Like, no, it was the Parks Department. And so you see little groups of people together with or without masks, but those are the people who've been their roommates, you know? So it's like, you know, if you've been with that person all this time, you can be with that person outside in your circle. You know, it's when you get into, you know, a big crowd, you know, like Madison Square Garden or Yankee Stadium with unfamiliar people that you don't know that, you know, somebody could introduce the virus into the crowd.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it's so sad that you have to ask that question these days.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing I would say is, let's say there's somebody very elderly in the in the house. I would limit the contact. I would limit the contact, or I would observe careful social distancing. But we have a 101-year-old in our family.
Oh, wow.
And for weeks and weeks, we didn't visit her. I mean, she has, you know, rotating home attendants, and the home attendants are very careful. They would wear masks, and certainly if they were sick or exposed, they would not show up. But knock wood, you know, she's managed to avoid contracting anything, because we know that it, if she were to get it, it's very likely to be her death knell. So after we've carefully quarantined, we know that we don't have it. You know, we can go see her. We can, you know, be in the same room, but with appropriate distancing. And, you know, it, you know, the loneliness and isolation might be worse for her than the virus itself.
Right. I understand she's pretty savvy. She can FaceTime with you and
yes.
all of that. So
that's the other thing, is that she through her, you know, through her amazing abilities, she's able to keep track with everybody. I mean, she can look at the relatives in San Francisco. Oh, it's so nice to see their kids growing up. She sees it and she laughs, and she sees it on Facebook, and she kind of bangs her way on her tablet. You know, and she can. That is the nice thing about quarantine, you know, 2021, as opposed to quarantine, you know, 1985.
I think the era of the Luddite will be going away.
Yeah.
From this experience.
Absolutely.
Because people are left with no choice.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I mean, you know, when I think of some of my patients, some of the relatively young, you know, a patient who's 70 says, well, no, I don't have a computer. Or no, I don't use, you know, I don't know how to Skype. I don't know. It's like, oh, you know, you better get with the program, because this
you're missing out on some virtual dinners, you know.
Yes, yes, yes.
With your loved ones and things.
All right. Fortunately, our listeners are listening to us via their computers or their mobile devices, and they're the savvy ones, and they range in, you know, all age groups. All right. This is a good point at which to pause, because we divide our podcast into two parts. What's coming up in part two, Layla?
Oh, let's see. My husband periodically complains his toes hurt, especially when he's doing yoga.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like, a non-COVID-19 question, we hope.
Yes.
Okay.
And a painful very welcome toes. One at that.
Painful toes. Yeah. Well, yeah, it could be. Could be the first sign, but no, probably not. All right. Let's tackle that question part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mudin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we'll be right back with more of Intelligent Medicine.